Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin with Lauren Gibbons and Craig Mauger, Jacob Kanzler, and John Ruhring. We've got our special guest in studio with us today here at MERS World Headquarters, Tom Shields from Marketing Resource Group. You've got your paper all in front of you, but see, we did all the work for you. We've got all the presidential Republican candidates right here on our wash and whiteboard.
I'm impressed. That's actually pretty good. And you can erase them in a matter of seconds if you want to, which could be happening as you get to next January.
Yeah, absolutely. But there's some names that we don't have on there, and I don't even know if we should put them on there. I guess we just learned Mark Everson is a former IRS commissioner. He's announced, I just looked at his website, I don't have him on the wash and whiteboard.
No, not at all. And I think you're also missing former Virginia Governor Gilmore is also, was one that's rumored out there as a potential. I think those are all people just looking at it, but they're not going to go anywhere. They're probably not going to change the makeup of the lineup.
And what point do people have to announce? If you're going to announce for president, you have to do it by when?
Well, if nobody knows you, you've got to do it pretty early. But if you've got a name ID and you've got, somebody like Christie can probably wait a little bit longer. People know him a little bit better, he can wait. But, you really want to be out there, I think, by this time. By July 1st, you really want to be out, I think, at this point in time. Gives you 6 months to campaign seriously.
And so you're talking this July 1st.
Yeah.
So you're talking like this week.
I think if Christie's not in yet, then I think he's trying. And Walker's a little bit different situation. Walker obviously is going to run. He's just, I get an email from him every day. Says, should I run? send me another $25. And I'll get in the race. So I think Walker's going to be in. I mean, he's already a national candidate. He hasn't just gone through the piece where you actually announce in the media.
What about like John Kasich? I mean, somebody like this. I mean, what do they got to do to get their name out there? It doesn't sound like he's going to announce until July. July 21?
Well, he's already out on the stump. I mean, he was here in Michigan next week, last week. So, I mean, he's already out on the stump. He's acting like a candidate. He's just not out there campaigning, or he's just not officially announced. They are going to do well in the first five or six primaries. Somewhere along the line, they have to exceed expectations. That's going to be a tough thing for them to do. So, and so they're going to have to, spend a lot of time in Iowa, spend a lot of time in New Hampshire, spend a lot of time in South Carolina, and do better there than people expect them to do.
So, out of the candidates that you've looked at, who do you think, I guess rank them from a Michigan perspective. Who do you think is strong in this state?
I think Bush obviously has to be the strongest candidate at this point in time. He's the only one out of probably all of them, except for maybe Trump, who has national name ID. He's got a national organization out there. He's raising more money than he would need at this point in time. He's putting together a solid national organization, something that you really need to do if you're going to be serious. I mean, you can get by every once in a while by focusing on one or two states, putting all your money there. I mean, I think we saw that with Huckabee a few years ago and a few other candidates. But it doesn't get you anywhere if you don't have that national organization. I think to be a serious candidate, you have the ability to do that.
We've really got 13 candidates who have declared here. We've got three sitting out to the sideline until they do declare. Who out of this bunch would you say are the serious candidates? Who could actually get the nomination?
I think, obviously, Bush. I think Rubio. I think that Huckabee's got a possibility. He's just got a lot of national exposure with, being on TV for the last 8 years. And Walker, I think, and potential Christie, just because, I think, and Kasich, just because those governors can tend to catch on. But I think those are all the ones. But I think that it's Rubio, Bush, and Walker are probably the leaders at this point in time. Even though Carson shows up getting about 10% in the polls recently. He doesn't go much below that, much above that. But he actually is polling some numbers.
A lot's been made of the size of this field. Who does that help among the candidates? And then will that hurt the eventual GOP nominee for president next year?
Well, we're not into the serious campaigning yet, so they're not beating up on each other. So at some point in time, that's going to happen. And at that point in time, we'll see whether or not it hurts them. But, everyone has to go through that period of time. They have to be able to do it. I think that what tells the difference is those who are put together the national organization so that they can do second or third in one state but go on to the next state and do well. Presidential politics, especially the primary, is all about exceeding expectations. If you're supposed to win the primary and you come in second, you're a loser. If you're supposed to come in fifth and you come in third, you're a winner. You have momentum going on your behalf. And you get all the precedent going into the next week's primaries. And you can build on that. So it's the key on these folks. You want to stay in the race is exceed the expectations, which if I were them, set expectations low going into the early primaries. Those person who wins Iowa doesn't usually win New Hampshire. And so, What can you do to set those expectations low so you're not losing that momentum as you go through the campaign?
What do you think Donald Trump does to this race as a consultant? I mean, is he going to cause problems for some of these other candidates for having to respond to some of the things he says? Or?
Well, you know, he's sort of a, you know, he's a loose cannon here. He says anything he feels like, which is great for you guys, but, you know, probably everybody in the Republican Party sort of cringes at that time. I think he gets in, he makes a lot of noise here, and he gets out. I think when it really said done, he was polling 8-10% in New Hampshire, I think, last week, running second to Bush. So he's going to cause some problems initially. I think he caused a lot of excitement, but I think he goes away in the end. He decides he wants to go do something else.
If you're not one of those 10 candidates who are in the Fox News debate, is your campaign over, or how do you get back into it?
I think you're in real trouble if you don't get into that. If you're not looked at as being one of the top 10 candidates, how can you let people consider you to be in the top one or two candidates? So if you're not looked at being in the top 10 candidates, I think you're in deep trouble. Unless you could make enough noise standing outside the Fox 2 debate and getting everybody to interview you so that everybody feels sorry for you and gives you a chance, and maybe you make it into the next debate because they felt that you had to be there, and somehow they made a mistake. But I think you're in real trouble if you're not in those debates.
Is that fair, though?
You know, the stage is only so large. I mean, could you imagine the 17 people sitting on the stage?
Yeah, I can. It just sounds exhilarating. You know what they should do? What would you think of this, Tom? We could make it like a reality TV series, you know, kind of like an American Idol, where the person who gets the fewest votes from the audience has to leave the race.
That wouldn't be bad.
That would actually increase viewership, don't you think?
It would be everybody gets a vote.
Save a lot of money too.
Yeah,
it would be like everybody sitting at the front table at a fundraiser. I mean, there's nobody out in the crowd. I mean, there'd be more people on stage than there would be in the crowd. You have that many people in there. I gotta believe you. Maybe there'd be no chance. They would be over by the time you get done with opening remarks. If you had 17 candidates,
be asleep by the end of opening remarks.
If we just skip opening remarks, go into a question.
A question.
We'll do a question a week. I think that's what Fox needs to do.
Why is it that we have such an enormous field on the Republican side?
Because there's no clear leader out there. There's no clear leader, I think. And that's frankly not bad for Republicans. It's good for Michigan, too, in that, you know, it may be by the time the primaries get here that this battle is still going on. I mean, it's going to take a while to filter through all of these Republican candidates. And, you know, some of them will run out of money if they don't do well in the early primaries. But you could very well, if this time in the polls, you know, the most Bush is getting is about 15%. You know, he's got a long way to go until he wraps up this nomination. He could very well, you know, win Iowa, lose New Hampshire, you know, lose South Carolina. And still this race would be going on with five or six strong candidates by the time it gets, you know, maybe three or four by the time it gets to Michigan. But, you know, we could be going the first couple of weeks unlike anything we've seen in the past.
Now, the big news from this past week, Lon Johnson announces he's going to run for the first congressional district. We had a curmudgeon at this table not too long ago who basically said, who cares? But we do care because this is a political town and we care about such political things. What was your reaction to this?
I can't believe he didn't learn his lesson from the last time he tried to move up north and run for state house. I mean, and that was a presidential year. It was a good year for Democrats. And he still got killed in that race, and basically because he was looked at as being a carpetbagger. I mean, he has a house in Washington. I think his wife was living in Chicago at the time. He has a house, I think, in downstate area, and he bought a foreclosed house up north. I don't think he ever moved into, at least didn't show up on the commercials that were run, and got killed up there. I just don't know what they're going to think in the UP. About somebody coming in from Washington or Detroit Metropolitan and run for Congress. I think it's just horrible for the Democrats.
Now, in full disclosure, you did work for the Beneschek campaign last go-around, right?
Correct. We did work for the Beneschek campaign last time, so I had full disclosure of that. And we actually helped run the campaign against Lon Johnson when he ran for state house, so I'm pretty familiar with the house that he bought in northern Michigan, that he still moved his voting registry to, so he still supposedly votes out of there.
So you know some stuff about Lon Johnson.
A little bit.
Yeah, okay. So did you guys use everything you had against him in his last campaign?
We didn't need any more than the fact that he was a carpetbagger. I mean, that alone in the polling data was just killed him. And, I think we ran a commercial that basically said that, if you see Lon Johnson, offer him direction on how to get around here if he asks.
He's got five generations up there in northern Michigan.
Well, he hasn't been there in a long time, and he had no residency. You know, and Upper Peninsula, as you know, in northern Michigan, is much more parochial, I think, than in most other parts of the state. And if you're not from there, and if you don't live there, I mean, it's tough to get people to vote for you.
But he must think that he's got something. I mean, he can raise some money.
He can raise a ton of money. I think he raised over $150,000 running for state house up there, and most of it out of state money. He can raise a ton of money. His wife is a fundraiser for Obama. He'll you know, she's not conflicted this time because she's not raising for Obama in time. She's got all the money and time in the world to raise some national money. He'll raise a lot of money up there. I don't think there's any question about that. I think Benachek will too. Not as much as probably Lon Johnson was, but I don't think he needs as much.
Bigger threat to Dan Benachek, Lon Johnson or a primary challenger?
You know, I don't know how you beat Benachek in a primary. I just don't know. He's pretty much in line with that district, and so I think he's in good shape. I think Lon Johnson, because it's a presidential year, because it's normally better for Democrats, probably faces probably a tougher opponent for Benachek at this point in time. But I don't necessarily think it's going to be an overwhelming opponent by any means, just because I think it's really tough. Maybe that's why he's announcing so early, so he can actually physically get up in the district, move up there, you know, get himself a map and get located.
All right, joining us on the other end of the line is Stephanie McLean from GMT Strategies. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this past decision here on Friday with the Supreme Court. I want to look at it through a political lens. Can you say that there's anybody who particularly wins or loses based on what we had happen on Friday with the Supreme Court ruling in favor of gay marriage?
Well, I think in a way we take a wedge issue off the table. I think Republicans in the primary are still going to talk about it, you know, vis-a-vis Ted Cruz and those guys. But it's just the way the country is moving.
Now, what did you think about what the Republican candidates in particular had to say about it in response? You know, Bush, it seemed like, kind of embraced it a little bit. But then you've got some others on the far right who are going to still try and use it to their advantage.
Right, and they can use it, but they can't use it as they did in 2004. I mean, they can't use it as an electoral issue. If you recall, in 2004, Karl Rove put up gay marriage things all over the country, and we lost significantly because of that issue. I'm surprised, quite frankly, how far the country has moved in 11 years. But they have to talk about it because it's a Republican primary, right? They have to, you know, feed their people red meat. But it's not going to be a general election issue. And again, it's a wedge issue that has now moved off the table.
So what about here in the state of Michigan? Is there any type of advantage using it for a Michigan candidate, particularly since we still got the Elliot Larson Civil Rights Act issue outstanding?
Right. That's the next big thing. You know, if you look across the country, particularly here in Michigan, but if you look across the country, it's just a hodgepodge of legislation about protecting people for their orientation. And Michigan is one of those states. The law of the land now says that we have gay marriage, so why won't you protect gay people from being discriminated against? The other side of that is most of America thinks, oh, we have gay marriage, so everything's fine. They don't realize that people can lose their jobs and their homes and all that stuff because they're gay. So it's going to be a difficult issue to explain.
Could it be hard for Democrats to use that issue in 2016, considering that there is a potential of a ballot proposal that would amend the Elliot Larson Civil Rights Act?
Use it how?
Well, in the sense that if it was on the ballot, if they got the signatures and they said, we're going to expand the Elliot Larson Civil Rights Act to include gays and lesbians, transgendered individuals, then folks might think, well, we've already got gay marriage, so there's the impetus to get out to vote may not be as strong and increase the Democratic turnout.
You know, 2016 is a presidential year, so turnout will be strong regardless. But as I said before, I think explaining Elliot Larson to folks was difficult before, and I think it's going to be more difficult now because folks think, oh, you know, they have gay marriage, so everything is fine. And people don't realize you can still lose your job, lose your home, yada, yada, yada. So I don't see it being used as an issue by either side. I really, really think it was kind of taken off the table, but it's important because people still lose their jobs and their homes, and but I don't think most folks realize that.
Now let's talk about this Republican field here, and we just had Tom Shields in here just a little bit ago from Marketing Resource Group, and when you take a look at this entire field of 16, possibly 17 candidates getting in, does that hurt the Republicans going into a general election against Hillary Clinton?
I don't think so. I think it's going to be a little bit like 2012. You know, you've got somebody who rises for a month and a half and, you know, goes back down. And at the end of the day, you end up with the nominee you thought you were going to have. I think Jeb Bush is doing, you know, just as a political consultant, I think he's doing a really good job. He's raising money. Speaks Spanish. He's what I would call moderate on some issues like immigration and, you know, and I think he'll have a little bit of trouble during the primaries, but I think at the end of the day, he's the guy with the most behind him.
You know, isn't that interesting, though? I mean, he's kind of positioning himself as more of a moderate candidate. And like I said earlier, I mean, his reaction to the gay marriage decision was pretty accepting. Considering that, you go 11, 12 years ago to his brother, who actually used gay marriage as a wedge to help himself win re-election.
Right. Well, you know, again, I'm not a Republican, but the problems that Republicans have is they can win primaries and not general elections. And I think Jeb Bush is a guy who, you know, can get through the primaries. He'll take some bruises, you know, definitely. But he's a guy who could stand up in a general election. No, Ted Cruz, you know, is not.
What would Ted Cruz's problems be?
He's so far to the right that he would not win a general. Look, I would love it if he won the primaries, you know. He'd be easy to beat, but...
You don't think it's happening?
No, I don't. I think if you go back to 2012 and 2008, Santorum rose for a while, and so-and-so rose for a while. And
Herman Cain, yeah. Rick Perry.
Yeah, Rick Perry can put on glasses, but it still doesn't make him smart.
What do you think, then, about the Democratic field? Are you bored by the fact that there doesn't really seem to be a serious challenge to Hillary Clinton?
I'm not, and it's because it's like the Barack Obama phenomenon for me. I can't be objective about this. I want to see a woman in the White House. So I'm not bored. I'm excited. You know, I wish I could be like totally objective and talk to you about this, but I can't. I just, you know, I wanted her 8 years ago. And
you get the sense from talking to others that there's a very similar thought out there?
Women certainly do.
And they see her as the best and most realistic option?
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, you know, people had doubts about her going back 20 years, you know, but she's bright. She served as probably one of our best secretaries of state. She's brilliant. And I think she would run a fabulous White House. I just do.
You think Bill would be a good first gentleman?
No comment.
Yeah. All right, we'll leave it at that. Stephanie McLean from GMT Strategies, thanks for joining us this morning. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Thanks to Lauren. And Lauren, you brought the donuts today, too. And you got to say that these are the best donuts you've ever had. You're serious about this.
I'm very serious about it. I brought in Sweetwater's Donuts. I was in Kalamazoo this weekend, and that is my choice for Michigan's donuts.
There was one that had M&Ms on the top.
That was a grasshopper. It was like a mint and chocolate donut with some M&Ms.
And what was that one that was as big as my face?
Oh, I'm not sure. There are a couple that were really big. The apple one was pretty big. That's a really good one.
But yeah.
They're all very good.
You're looking out for our health here. I appreciate it.
Oh, I did feel a little bad, but I can't leave Kalamazoo without getting Sweetwater's. It's difficult.
Okay, they did not pay for a spot on this podcast.
No,
just in full
no, they
disclosure.
Didn't. I bought the donuts, so.
Okay. All right. Very good. All right. Until next week, I'm Kyle Mullen. Take care.